Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observation Podcast. I'm Brian Chaffin, and today is March 2nd, 2017, and with me today, I have John Effin Martellaro.
Oh, wow. I'm happy to be here.
Effin Martellaro. That guy, I tell you. Well, Jeff is out today. He's busily moving the heaven and earth is what he's doing. So it's John and I today. And for today's topic, we have a couple of semi-fun things. Either that or it's going to be like really cranky and stuff. But let's actually start off with Microsoft Office. And specifically, you sort of reacted to a piece that Jeff Butts wrote for us, offering a bunch of alternatives to Microsoft Office.
Yeah, you know, Jeff is a great writer. I'm really happy to have him on board, and he's doing great work for us. But he started me thinking, which a good writer should do, in his article called Ditch Redmond with These Microsoft Office Alternatives for the Mac, and he goes into some substitutes that are available. There's Google Docs, and there's LibreOffice. And so if you wanted to get away from using Microsoft Office for some reason, his article is great. It gives you the good and the bad of each alternative. But I started thinking, and it all started with one of the readers who kind of got me going when he said, this article doesn't answer the most important question. Why would it be advisable to ditch Microsoft Office? You know, it seems like a dogma from an old millennium. And I started thinking about, you know, the old Klingon wars and the old Mac PC wars and the new age and the age of Satya Nadella and how well Microsoft is doing lately and how crisp the company seems and my renewed enthusiasm for Microsoft and Satya Nadella and his technical initiatives. And he's so smart, and the Surface Studio and putting Microsoft Office on the iPad and just all the things that Microsoft is doing right lately. And so over the last, what, maybe 2 years, I forget when Satya Nadella came on board, but I think it was about, what, 2 years ago, Brian?
Sure, that'll work. Let's go with that.
And so my estimation and appreciation of Microsoft has improved quite a bit, and I have been playing more and more with Windows 10 and kind of liking it, Windows 10. If I had to say one thing about Windows 10, my initial gut technical reaction to it is it just seems so adult, if I may use that
Return
phrase.
And from
subroutine. I'm not quite sure where it comes from. But that lays the foundation for my reaction to the article where I'm going, well, you know what? If you want to do Microsoft Word, do Word. It's the best of all of the imitators. And why not use the product that you're trying to substitute? This idea of getting rid of Microsoft software from your machine, with Microsoft's renewed initiatives and continuing excellence in security and making sure that the Office is up to date and state of the art, why not go with the Office suite? I would not be upset. I have Microsoft Office on one of my Macs. It's fun. It's usable. It's easy. Why not? I need to erase myself from the Microsoft world.
I've got so many responses to that. First of all, Mac Office was once terrific, and it's probably getting terrific again. You know, when Microsoft first put together the Mac Business Group, which no longer exists, Office was a really, really, really solid product. I mean, it was still kind of the, you know, redheaded stepchild of the Office family, and from the standpoint that Microsoft didn't include the entire suite with Mac Office, or Office for Mac, as it was called. You know, it was definitely good. It felt like a Mac app. It's good again today. I agree with you. Satya Nadella is just such a, I mean, it's a night and day difference between him and Monkey Boy. And
but Here it comes.
By the way, I was reading a headline. I was reading a headline yesterday. It was a political headline, or maybe it was even a political tweet. But it was something along the lines of, anytime anyone says "but," everything before "but" was a lie. Everything I just said was absolutely true. There is certainly some merit to the reader's comment about, like, this idea of wanting to be Microsoft free is sort of old millennium, previous millennium thinking. Microsoft today is definitely, a much better company. Their aims seem to be a lot better. Their execution is infinitely better.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yep. Office is still expensive. And so while there may be less merit today, of course, everyone's mileage may vary, but there may be less merit to this, to the notion of wanting to be Microsoft free, to be Microsoft free. But Office is still expensive, and there are plenty of people out there who need Office functionality and Office compatibility, but they can't afford the Office suite, or they can't even afford the
sure.
individual apps because they,
sure.
you know, they are expensive.
And, you know, there's things you can do with Apple suite of Keynote, Pages, and Numbers.
Wait, you can import and export. Apple's neglected suite.
Yes.
I edited that for you. I fixed it.
Okay. Thank you. But, you can even take a DocX and open it and text edit.
It's true.
You have to read it real quick. So it's not as if you can't get your work done without Microsoft Office.
It's true.
And these niceties about sharing in the cloud and mutual editing or some of the add-ons are just peripheral things.
There is a lot about Pages and Numbers and Keynote that are, in fact, terrific. They do feel neglected to me. We haven't gotten significant updates in forever. So that makes me cranky as all get out, but they are good pieces of software.
One thing I do all the time is import a PowerPoint presentation, edit it in Keynote, and export it back to PowerPoint for use of somebody else.
Sure.
So you can do that. But you know, I think what's driving this in my mind is that there was a time when Macs and the hardware and the quality of Mac OS X, now Mac OS, were just so head and shoulders above what was available in the PC world that it was kind of distasteful to sort of
had the vestiges of the platform wars too. Like, you know, we didn't want to support Microsoft because Microsoft had ripped off Windows from Mac OS going back to the 80s.
Water under the bridge.
And that is water under the bridge at this point.
And so we have really great hardware on the PC side, and we have a respectable, secure, usable Windows 10 without the headaches of Windows 8 and when they learned their lessons. Mm-hmm. And so it's not so much that Apple's so far ahead anymore that it's distasteful to be using a Microsoft product.
Boy, them's are fighting words for some people.
I've really changed, haven't I?
You have really changed. I don't even know what effing Martellaro. Man, that guy. Well, I think for me, maybe I shouldn't project too much. For me, and maybe even for you too, a big part of any shifting that we're feeling about Microsoft is simply Steve Ballmer being gone.
And that's a big part of it.
That guy was just, you know, he is such a
goofball.
Yeah, and he was just so wrong about so many things. He was just so wrong and ham-fisted and you know, monkey boy. I mean,
there was this big shift when Satya arrived. Instead of Windows all the time, Windows everywhere, Windows only, and trying to keep the best of what they can do on Windows, the strategy became we want to provide solutions, Microsoft best of breed solutions on all the platforms
yeah.
that are running.
Right.
And I thought that was a sea change. I liked it.
It was a sea change, and I also liked it. I'm not down with toaster fridges still, but that story, I guess, is still being written even as we speak. All right, listen, we have a sponsor today, John F. and Margaro. That sponsor is Elgato with their Eve light switch. Now, I like Elgato. I've liked Elgato for a long time. They are a Mac company. They're an Apple company. They're not owned by Apple, but they do things in the Apple ecosystem, and this is what they do. And that means that they respect the technologies, they know the technologies, and they take care of us as users and fans of Apple devices. So that is my bias coming into this spot. I like this company. The Eve light switch is a smart light switch, and it's HomeKit compatible, right? This is very important. It's not only HomeKit compatible, it's communicating with your iPhone or your iPad or your Mac with Bluetooth. It doesn't need a hub, doesn't need a gateway, and that means you can control it directly with Siri. You can control it with Apple's Home app. It respects the HomeKit system, and it's more secure because it's not internet addressable. And these are all very, very, very good things. You can set up scenes, right, that automatically control other HomeKit-enabled accessories. It works with Siri. Like I said, it's a real easy setup. It's a good product. Now, Jeff's been testing these for a while. He definitely likes his Eve products. The light switch is great. And the groovy thing is that you can get a 10% discount just because you're listening to this show. And not only will you get 10% off, you're going to also get free shipping as long as you pick FedEx Ground Home Delivery. If you pick that, you're going to get free shipping. It's 10% off. Now, this is directly when you use coupon code TDO at Elgato's site. And this is good off of the Eve light switch. So you want to, if you are interested in the smart home, this is a great, great way for you to get into it or to expand your smart home. Elgato knows HomeKit. You got to check this stuff out. So it's TDO is the coupon code, and you can use that over at Elgato.com. We are happy to have them as sponsors, and we definitely appreciate it.
Yes.
All right, we have another topic here. We've actually written and talked about this already at TMO, but I know you've got some other thoughts on this, John. And this was Tim Cook claiming, despite all evidence to the contrary, that Apple cares about its pro users. And if I understand correctly, you've got a little bit of empathy for him saying that.
I have some empathy, but I'm also rather critical and respect that maybe you haven't run across before. Let me start with the negative part of it. When employees don't live up to Tim Cook's standards, when they don't meet their sales quotas, when they don't deliver products on time, there is a rather stern response because, as we know, only excellence is accepted at Apple.
And we should explain, John, that these comments that we're talking about came at Apple's shareholder meeting this week, where he, right, in response to a question from a shareholder, he said that you know, we care about pro users and we particularly care about creative pros, that they're important to us. And it's backing that up is what you and I are talking about.
Yeah. And one reason why that bothered me was that a CEO demands a lot of his Apple employees. But when it comes time to smooth things over with the shareholders and it comes time to own up to these long delays in the delivery of Mac products, the best he can do is to sort of say, you know, stay tuned. You'll see us do more. Sort of an apologetic response, and that didn't go over well with me. On the other hand,
but he's also been saying it a long time. I mean, here's the problem, yeah. John. Here's where I get super cranky about this. And Apple has all of the resources. Apple effectively has unlimited resources. They're not literally unlimited, but they're figuratively unlimited. And Apple can do anything that it wants with all of that money.
Well, let me put some color on that. Okay. There are engineers who have expertise in Apple technologies and the silicon and the marrying of the hardware to the software. And those employees, if they leave, have to be replaced. And money doesn't buy that kind of expertise off the street. You have to develop the expertise from within Apple. And as Mark Gurman mentioned last year, at Bloomberg, there has been some personnel shuffles and loss of talent in the Mac group. And I think
that is supposedly coming from the fact that the Mac is not in favor. They're not giving the product line the attention it deserves. And that's one reason why they've had some churn.
Well, it could be that Tim Cook was busy with other things, and that's some criticism he's come under too, is that when you're busy working with, you know, a new Apple Park and all the other issues and lawsuits and the things that a CEO has to deal with, you have precious little time to lay out a product vision. But considering all the heat that Apple took last year, starting from the Apple Hello Again event, I think it's back on Tim Cook's radar, and I think there's a renewed attention. Part of it is because, you know, Mac sales have been holding steady, whereas iPad sales have been declining.
So Mac sales were actually down year over year for three or four quarters last year.
Well, yeah, but they were up in the fourth quarter, and they're running around 20 million a year, right? So we're not seeing that downward trend in Mac sales like we're seeing on the iPad. This worries.
Yeah, it's not like the iPad, but you know, we went from, you remember when we were bragging about like how Apple, the Macs were outselling the PC market. I have a train outside, so I'm sorry. The Macs outgrew the market. Like, you know, I think it was like 10 quarters in a row. And then it was, you know, we missed one quarter, but then it was like 20 and 30 quarters.
There were two reasons for that. One was the tablet mania, and the other was Windows 8. But now Windows 8 is gone, and people are surfeit with tablets, and there is a renewed cycle in the PC buying, especially in business, with Windows 10 being replacing
Apple's,
Windows 8.
Apple's Mac sales were down year over year until they did. You know, my running joke has been Apple found one weird trick of goosing Mac sales, which is to release a new MacBook Pro, and
well, you know what it could be too. It could be that there's some new technologies coming along that Apple wanted to deal with. I think part of it was Intel got wrapped around the axle with Apple got wrapped around the axle with Intel's roadmap, and there's some processors that they wanted but couldn't get in quantity. Other processors they had to settle for. Some engineering trade-offs and decisions about battery life versus, you know, memory capacity, which is how we got into that 16 gigabyte limit. But considering that there may be some new storage technologies with the M2 technology replacing eSATA, as I understand it, I could be wrong, APFS coming along.
All of which is well and good. So great. We're gonna maybe finally get some stuff.
And they've got to figure out how to make the touch bar work on the iMac, right? Because the touch bar is on the keyboard, and the keyboard's not attached to the iMac.
Yeah, release a new keyboard that's got a touch bar on it. Are you kidding me? Yeah. Seriously?
Got to work out some engineering and security encryption details.
Yeah. You know, I tell you what. Let's make that a given.
It's just
John.
Something to be aware of.
Let's make this a given.
I'm not happy either. But I am not happy.
let's make everything. I admire you for being such a gentleman about things in all ways. And you are, in fact, a gentleman and a gentle soul, too. But even if all of this is true and we have new technologies coming and Apple is, you know, finally going to get off its duff and release new desktop Macs this year, the fact that Apple is still selling years-old technology at brand new prices is offensive as all get out.
There is one good point, though, the one light at the end of the tunnel, and that is if Apple were going to terminate the Mac Pro line, they would have terminated it and they'd have pulled the Mac Pros from the stores.
You know, it's funny.
But the fact that they're still there opens the door for Apple to say, ah, the 2017 Mac Pro is now shipping.
Yeah, I agree with that. John Keat and I talked about that yesterday on ACM, about the fact that, I mean, like, you would, if Apple is going to kill the Mac Pro, Apple should have done so when it killed the Cinema Display.
Right.
Right. And that Apple did not does, in fact, suggest that the product line isn't dead yet. And then there's still the reality. There's still the reality that Apple itself needs pro-level hardware to make everything else, to design and make its own software, its coding tools for iPhone, to design and do all the design work that they do with all of the things that they do, all the engineering. They need Macs for that stuff. And yep, they're not going to use Windows like animals. And that has, you know, that's been the sort of reassurance in the back of my mind for years now. But goodness gracious, it's so long. And well, God, I mean, and pretend to have the nerve to tell us that he cares when he's not demonstrating it.
A 27-inch iMac from 2015 with an i7. And 32 gig of RAM is a fine machine to do development on, do CAD on, research on, photography, whatever you want to do. So, I mean, the 5K iMac, I think you have one.
I do.
It's a fine machine, and it's not that old
it's
yet.
It's a prosumer
We're not in a crisis.
Machine. It is old. Are you kidding me? It's 500 days old, man. This is listen, okay.
Well, maybe Apple's discovered that people are not replacing their desktops that often.
But it's not just the replacement cycle, man. It is this. So, like, for instance, I don't need to replace my iMac 5K. It's a year and a half old. It's still a fantastic machine.
But some people
that's
do.
Great. And some people do, and maybe they've got a machine that's 4 years old or 5 years old or 6 years old or 7 years old.
Right.
I've gotten this pushback from readers on a couple of occasions. They're like, well, you know, how often does Apple need to update its machines? I'm not going to replace mine for 5 years. At any given moment, people do not want to go buy 2-year-old technology at today's prices, or in the case of Mac Pro, 4-year-old.
I'm with you there, friend. Absolutely. Right on.
So a couple more minor points on this. To your point, Apple saw what happened with Mac sales when it released a new MacBook Pro. Mac sales went up. So hopefully that was a fine reminder. Plus, the executive team has to be aware of the criticism that they're getting, and has to be aware that this affects the entire ecosystem. And I think that we can see that we saw proof of that when Apple released a press release for a point update on Logic. A point update, a press release for a point update, which is incredibly unusual. And I think that was Apple being aware that, you know, these guys are right. We didn't do anything in 2016. We released 14 new products.
Right.
And so let's start releasing some new products, and let's make sure that people know about it. So I'm
let's
hoping
get people excited again. Let's build some Halo machines. Let's get the enthusiasm going. Yeah. Let's show we can build the best in the world and get our reputation back.
And let's hope that that's the case. Let's hope that they're feeling that heat, and that you know they're putting the pedal to the metal, and that 2017 is going to be the start of that December of 2016. When did the MacBook Pros get introduced? I was there at the event. Was it October? Okay, great.
28th.
Something like that. So let's hope that was the beginning of a resurgence in Mac hardware, and that you know we've got good times ahead of us again.
Hope so.
All right. So I want to thank you so much for joining me today helping me take care of the show for Jeff. And I want to thank Elgato for being our sponsor with the Eve light switch. And thank you, John.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.